नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय अचिष्यन्ति मनुष्यस्त्वम् सर्वकामवरेश्वरि युपोपहारवरिभिः सर्वकामवरप्रदम् अचिष्यन्ति विल् वर्शिप् Manushya, human society, Tvam, unto you, Sarvakama Varahishwarim, because you are the best of the demigods who can fulfill all material desires. Dhrupa, by incense, Upahara, presentations. Balipi, by different types of worship through sacrifice. Sarvakama, of all material desires. Vara, blessings. Padam, one who can bestow. Translation. By sacrifices of animals, ordinary human beings will worship you gorgeously with various paraphernalia because you are supreme in fulfilling the material desires of everyone. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.20, Kamaishthais ter hutadhyana prapadyante nidevata. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods. Therefore, the word manushya meaning human being, here refers to one who does not know the actual goal of life. Such a person wants to enjoy the material world by taking birth in a highly elevated family with the benefits of education, beauty, and immense wealth, which in the material world are desirable. One who has forgotten the real aim of life may worship Goddess Durga, Maya Shakti, under various names for different purposes and in different places. As there are many holy places for the worship of Krishna, there are also many holy places in India for the worship of Durga Devi, or Maya Devi, who took birth as the daughter of Yashoda. After cheating Kamsa, Maya Devi dispersed herself to various places, especially in Vindhyachala, to accept regular worship from ordinary men. Human beings should actually be interested in understanding Atma Tattva, the truth of Atma, the spirit soul, and Paramatma, the supreme soul. Those who are interested in Atma Tattva will worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yasmin Vidyate Sarvam Evam Vidyatam Bhavati. However, as explained in the next verse of this chapter, those who cannot understand Atma Tattva, Apasyatma Atma Tattva, worship Yoga Maya in her different features. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.12 says, Shrota Vyagini Rajendra Mrinam Shanti Sahasrasa Apasyatam Atma Tattvam Griheshu Grihamayinam. Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O Emperor. Those who are interested in remaining in this material world and are not interested in spiritual salvation have many duties. But for one who is interested in spiritual salvation, the only duty is to surrender fully unto Krishna. Sarva dharman bhavityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja. Such a person is not interested in material enjoyment. So here Krishna then is speaking to Yogamaya when she comes, then she will be worshipped by so many, and in this way she will give so much benefit to all these persons in the material world who are looking for material benefit. The living entity in the material world is very serious about the material world, about getting facility, about enjoying. And it becomes very important for them. So importance or priority then is given to material development, material facility, the position, wealth, influence, you know, what you have, land, homes, family, all these different things. They become very important for someone who wants to stay here, right? If you want to stay someplace, you need facility. So then, naturally, if one wants to stay in the material world, then material facility becomes the main focus. Someone who wants to get out of the material world, then that's not their main focus. Prabhupada says they only have one duty, that's to worship the Supreme Lord. So if you want things, you have to take care. I think everyone would say that if you had a possession and neglected it, so that it became, you know, broken or somehow or another unusable, everyone would say this is irresponsible. So the Vedic literature then is for developing responsible persons with a responsible mentality. So responsibility means you want it, then you take care of it. You don't want it, then you don't have to take care of it. Right? This is important. Generally what happens is, I want it, someone else should take care of it. Right? But the Vedic concept is, I want it, I take care of it. Those who don't want it, don't have to be involved, don't take care of it. This is an important aspect. So in the Vedic literatures then, if you want these things, you want land, then there's a way you have to take care. You want a house, you want a family, you have to take care. You have money, you have to take care. So that it has to be the complete picture. This is sin. Sin is when you want something but don't want to take care of it. I want to extract from it my enjoyment, but I don't want to maintain it or take care. Because maintenance is a mode of goodness. To enjoy it, that's the mode of passion. To be attached to it, that's the mode of ignorance. So, but the mode of goodness is I have to maintain it. So you generally see the attachment is pretty universal. Everyone will agree with that, say that's quite good. That you should enjoy it also, yes, everyone will basically agree with that. That you should maintain it, then those who are knowledgeable, they will say yes. And others will generally tend to avoid that one. So this mode of goodness, then that is from where it's all the different various directions come in the Vedic literature as to the duties to take care of something. You want to take care, then you have to take care not how we want to take care, but how it should be taken care of. Right? The plant gets water, right? And the cow gets grass. If you decide I'm going to put grass on top of the plants and water on top of the cow, it may be nice. You know, he wants to do. It's nice. But unfortunately, nice is not good enough. That's the bottom line. Means there has to be some knowledge. If it's just we want, that's great. So does the baby. The baby wants. Oh, baby wants. So then automatically it's understood. The whole world steps aside so baby gets what it wants. Because getting what you want is what the material world is all about. But then some may say, well, maybe baby shouldn't get that. Right? Prabhupada tells the story that the small child wanted to stick its finger into the fan. Right? So then you could say, no, it shouldn't stick its finger in the fan. Oh, okay, it wants to stick its finger. All right, he wants, so let him stick his finger. Why you should restrict? Why you? Right? No. So then he said, no. So okay, then they said, okay, kid wants, he doesn't understand by hearing. Tell him, no, it's not good, you'll get hurt, this, that. Child's very stubborn. Oh, okay. So then third class intelligence. Okay, turn off the fan. They turn off the fan. When the fan's going very slow, then they say, okay, now stick your finger. Right? So then he sticks his finger, and then it makes a big noise, and he gets scared. Then he doesn't put his finger. Right? So the idea is we have to take care according to their mentality. Right? And then who decides what that mentality is? Right? Who has designed the cow eats grass and the plant drinks water? Right? We didn't do it. Right? So that's already established by the Lord. So that is the point. The scriptures then give us, you want it, you take care of it in this way. Otherwise, it's against your duty. Right? It means you have to take both sides. Sin, as we said before, is I only want to take one side, and the other side it won't bother me. I like the money, but I don't want to work for it. Right? So I steal it. So I have the money. So that's sin. You want the money, you work. You don't want to work, then you don't want money. Right? That's how it works. So this is the thing. This is intelligence, to be able to discern between what is my duty and what's not. That's real intelligence. And what are others' duty and not? Right? Because I'm into one thing, okay, you know, because we're renounced, that means everybody's got to renounce. Or because we're grihasthas, then everybody's got to put up with it. No, it's everybody has their what they do. That's the responsibility. And responsibility we have to take ourselves. That's the point. The tendency is, no, someone else should take it. Right? Someone else should take it. Why I should take it? No, you want it, then you do it. You don't want it, you don't do it. And if you can't figure it out, then work under someone who will tell you what to do. Right? That's the Vedic literature. You lead or you follow. But you can't do neither. If you want to do neither, then there is also an option in the Vedic literature. It's called the forest. You go to the forest, then you can do whatever you like or not like, and no one's going to bother you. You know, except for the tigers and the wild boars and stuff. But other than them, no one will mind what you do. So then, this leaves the... So this shows the importance of duty. Why it's there. Generally, it's duty is a bad word, right? Duty means doing something you really don't want to do. Right? And doing things I want to do, that's just my sentiment, that's my feeling. But there is actually a platform of human existence where duty is what one wants to do. Duty is what one wants to do. So that platform is then what these scriptures talk about as the actual human platform. Here we see in the purport, Prabhupada puts human being in quotation marks here, meaning they're in a human form, but they're not actually humans. Because human means they're interested in elevation. So at least minimum elevation is pious activities to get from this place, at least maintain this, if not go to the heavenly planets. More real is want to get out of the material world. But actual real is go back to Godhead. So that's the highest human being. That's why we see there's human beings in name only or in form only. Then there are human beings who are happy with the material world. Higher than that are human beings that are not happy with the material world. And then the highest human beings are those who want to go back to Godhead. So now, each of those then has their duty. Right? You want to get out of this material world, then you're responsible to not do things that bind you in the material world. If you like to be in the material world, then you should be responsible to take care of the material world so it will respond nicely to you and you can work together so that you get what you want and you don't bother the material nature. Right? Material nature is a person. So she doesn't like to be bothered. Right? Just like if you poke the person next to you, they poke you back. Right? So material nature is like that. You bother her, she'll bother you back. Very simple. It doesn't matter what you think, what your sentiment is. Who cares? Like that. You disturb her, you know, in an unlawful way, and you'll get a reaction. That's all. Very simple. So then you have to deal nicely. Then if you want to get out of here, then you deal pleasantly, because you deal pleasantly with everybody. But your focus is on not getting entangled. But if you want to go back to Godhead, then that leaves only one duty. Is that is to please Krishna, surrender to Krishna. So this is a very important point, very subtle point, is that surrender to Krishna means whatever you do to develop your love for Krishna, which means also to get out of the material entanglement, that has to be pleasurable to Krishna. Right? Now as we notice here, the material energy in this form is a sister. Right? So generally you'll find most good brothers are not overly interested in anyone bothering their sister. Right? It can generally cause a lot of difficulties for one's personal health, bothering someone else's sister. Right? So here, then Krishna, in the process of becoming attached to him, he doesn't want you to bother the material energy. That means you should deal with the material energy how you're supposed to deal. But now, the differences between the devotee and the non-devotee is the devotee is dealing it that way because it's Krishna's pleasure. Right? Krishna, dealing with Krishna's devotees, dealing with Krishna's energies, if they're done properly so that they please Krishna, that is that surrender to Krishna. Therefore, that surrender takes manifold manifestations. Right? Unlimited manifestations. So it means everything can be engaged as long as you can see the actual path of it connecting to Krishna. One can say, oh, we're devotees, we don't need to do something. Okay, but then you have to be able, you should be able to understand how is it that what I'm doing or not doing is pleasing to Krishna. Because saying it, that's the first step, right? Saying something is the first step. Right? Doing it's another step. Like somebody says, yes, yes, don't worry, I'll do it. But if they don't do it, it's not so impressive. So saying it's the first thing, doing it's the next step. So to say we're devotees, say we're surrendered, say we're doing everything, that's good, that's the first step. But then we should do it. We should see, how is it everything that I do in my life is connected to Krishna? It's part of my process of surrender to Krishna. Either it's helping me develop my attraction for Krishna, or it's helping me give up my attachment to the material world. Right? It should fit into one of these two categories. Always remember Krishna, so it's attracting me to Krishna. Or never forget Krishna, it's taking me out of my attachment to the material world. So then whatever we're dealing with should fit into that. And therefore, then what's connected with Krishna then should be according to the scriptures what actually pleases Krishna. And what gets us out of the material world then also should be seen in relationship to what pleases Krishna and doesn't disturb anyone else. In fact, if we can not disturb and if they are happy with it, that's even better. Right? Means the bottom line is don't disturb the devotees. Right? That's the bottom line. Don't offend the devotees. That's not perfection. That'll get you out of the material world, but pleasing the devotees will get you into the spiritual world. Right? I heard one class once where it was explained is we have the 10 offenses. That's the negative side of it, that you should avoid. So then the actual standard is the opposite. Right? Don't offend preachers. Okay, so what does that mean? You should please the preachers. Right? Don't see Krishna's name equal with the demigods. Right? That means you should see Krishna's name as special. Right? Don't disobey the order of Guru. It means you should follow the order of Guru. Like this, then it's there. So that's just the minimum. Don't go below that. If you go below that, then you're in the red. Right? So you stay above that, and then you progress to the actual process. So here then, that's the whole science. That's what Gita is trying to teach us. How the body, the mind, the words can be engaged in Krishna's service. Right? How they can be engaged. In the beginning we may look at it that simply something's important to us, and we try to somehow or another not deal with it against devotional principles. Right? We become more developed, then we will try to engage it nicely in Krishna's service, according to what pleases him. Right? But still the motive is our own desires. So the one duty means simply to please Krishna. So since I have a certain body, certain facilities in that, then I should please Krishna with that. What pleases Krishna? Then I will start looking back at what are the directions of the scriptures. Does that make sense? The one is, I have a desire, so what do the scriptures say about it? What's proper and not proper to deal with it? And plus then, you know, a bonus is that I could also do it in this way, Krishna would be happy with it. But the impetus was our own desire. So the one duty means, no, what is pleasing to Krishna? And so I have to serve Krishna. So I serve Krishna with my body, mind, and words. Okay, what body do I have? Okay, so what does the scripture say about using that body in Krishna's service? What kind of mind do I have? What does the scripture say about using that in Krishna's service? What kind of words, what does it say about that? We see the difference. The difference is what is the motive? What's the underlying start of the whole process? Is it because I want to do it, and so I'll dovetail it in Krishna's service? That's the meaning of dovetail. The other is sarvadharmam padi. I give up all religion, I surrender to Krishna. Then having surrendered to Krishna, now I look at religion. Okay, what religious things that I am dealing with, or could deal with, would be pleasing for me to use in Krishna's service? Otherwise, then one follows dharma, but in connection to Krishna. So these are the two platforms. So here my Krishna is saying, you know, that Yogamaya, she comes here, then, you know, everyone will take care of her very nicely and worship her very nicely and, you know, offer so many different things. And in this way she'll fulfill the material desires. But actually, you know, it's just their fun. But the ones who worship her, then they don't have so much fun. Any questions on this or comments? Or? No? Yes. Is that we take up some activity, you know, that is supposed to be pleasing to Krishna. But how do we know that it actually is pleasing to Krishna? Because we generally assume that it is. It's like the other day, then a bucket was found in the kitchen that had slightly cloudy water. So generally there's always a bucket in the kitchen with slightly cloudy water called lemon juice. But this day, that slightly cloudy bucket of water was called the water that they washed the floor with. So then the pujari comes, fills up the Lord's glass, it gets offered, and then afterwards they figure out what it is, because somebody's picking up the bucket to throw it out. Hey, where are you going with the bucket? No, I understand it's just the water for cleaning the floor. What do you mean? I just offered that. That's Mahabhashara. You know? So then there was a whole discussion on, is this Mahabhashara or not? I think finally reason prevailed and they threw the bucket of water out, but for some time sentiments were running very high. So like this. So it's the first principle is that it's according to Guru Sadhana Shastra. That's the basis. Within that, then we choose. You know? It's just like you go into a shop, and what's in that shop you can choose. You can't choose something that's in another shop and expect that shop will give it to you. So within what's authorized in the scriptures, that's where we start from. Then we see what if the devotees, our authorities, and ourselves are satisfied. Then we can understand it's pleasing to Krishna. Like that. So with those two things, then we can tell whether it is or not. So there shouldn't be any speculation. That's why the culture is important. Because Prabhupada mentions is that if the culture is not there, then it will give rise to speculation. Like that. He says philosophy without religion is mental speculation. So we always have to be very careful that just because it's a rule, then automatically rules are for smartas, and we as devotees then don't follow rules. So that's actually a hippie platform. It's not responsible person. Responsible person knows rules must be followed. The whole world works because of that. But there is a class of men who think the world works without rules. So then they take their natural, affinity for not following any rules and simply fulfilling their own sentiments as spontaneous devotional service. What actually basically doesn't have a whole lot to do with it. Sentiment is good if it's pure. If the sentiment is aimed at Krishna, that's what we're trying to get to. But the reflection, a material sentiment, doesn't really have a whole lot of value. If you can take that sentiment and connect it to Krishna, then it has value. But sentiment not connected to Krishna doesn't have any meaning, even though it may be greatly appreciated and glorified in this world. It's not good enough. That's the we always have to be very, very careful of. So sometimes the devotees feel that they are aloof to our own culture. And, so then they figure, because Prabhupada's talked about the smartas, but the smarta means they follow rules simply because it's a rule that should be followed, and they would get material profit from it. That's a smarta. But a devotee follows the rules because they know that Krishna made the rules. No one else made them. So therefore, it's how Krishna likes it, right? That's just the way it is. You don't see, Mother Yashoda get out a TV dinner and throw it into the microwave, right? Because Krishna, it means if that was, hot cuisine, then that's what they would be eating in Goloka Vrindavan. But because it's not, therefore Mother Yashoda cooks from fresh things. So that's the point. So Krishna makes the rule, therefore, pure natural things cooked in a certain way, with love and devotion. Mother Yashoda always cooks with love and devotion. Right? It's always fresh. All these things. All the rules that are there are simply so that we know what they do, the residents of the spiritual world. So one can always look at something from so many different angles. One can take any rule and try to put it into that category. Or one can take it and put it into the exact opposite. We were discussing the other day, someone had a name, and it was, connected with Dwarka Krishna. So then, it's a fancier fad these days, and everything should be rasik, and there should be nothing, that's anything to do with rules or anything, everything has to be sweet and everything. Like Sanatan, means eternal, or Jiva means soul, or, things like that, like our the Acharya's names, we may have to work on them, because they need a little upgrading. They're not so rasik, like that. So, therefore, there's the idea is that there was a whole argument this person's name was not, very rasik, not very tasty. But then it's funny that to establish the principle of the highest form of separation of Krishna and the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan, that is based on the principle of Krishna having gone away to Dwarka, and in Dwarka, then he is feeling so much of this separation. And he is feeling, he understands that I can't go back to Vrindavan. Because the residents of Vrindavan are just staying alive simply because they have the slimmest hope that maybe he'll come back. Well, if he goes back, then that hope that he'll come will not be there anymore. And then the thought that he might leave again, that will kill me. So this is being experienced in this pastime. The topmost platform of this separation. And then we see of that, then that's manifested even more acute than when Krishna goes to Kurukshetra and actually meets the residents so they can see each other, but they can't appreciate the same rasa because of the situation. So that Kurukshetra then is Puri, and Lord Chaitanya as Radharani went to Puri. And so then one starts to doubt the importance of such judgments on Rasik names. When we see the Sanatana Goswami then describes all this in his literature to establish this highest principle. So therefore it depends upon one's vision whether something's Rasik or not. Because they take something like Dravida Gorilla. Now, is his attraction to the gopis and grabbing them and trying to walk off with them, Rishabhachuda, now is that Rasik? He greatly appreciated the gopis. You know? So that's the point. Raghunath Das is sitting next to the side of Radhakund, and when Rupa Goswami left, then to him it was like a tiger, ready to swallow him up. So he had no satisfaction in sitting next to Radhakund, which was his place of residence. So therefore, there is a culture there. And that culture is very fine. And it doesn't give rise to much interpretation. The interpretation in line with the Acharyas, that's fine. But if it's not in line with the Acharyas, it's only in line with our mind, it doesn't really have any meaning or value for those who want to go back to Godhead. For those who want to stay here, great. The more wild your mind is, the more selfish, self-centered, then the better we'll stay here. But if we want to go back to Godhead, then we have to see as well, actually, I have to surrender. And surrender means doing what Krishna wants. Then within what Krishna wants, since Krishna is unlimited, that means there's unlimited what I can do for Krishna. So there is no restriction. So to stay that Krishna consciousness or following the rules restricts us, that is the statement of someone who their information needs to be expanded. Or as Prabhupada said, poor fund of knowledge. They don't know what they're talking about. Like that. So, one has to educate oneself, and one has to apply that through the culture. So that combination then removes speculation. Then one can be on a, you know, solid platform. Does that make some sense? Yes.
You were talking about those two kind of approach. One is the Saradharma Paritya, giving up everything, and other one is not telling everything to Krishna. So actually in principle they are same, it's like by result they are same. Just one is first not tell everything to Krishna, then he pleases Krishna with that. Other one is first he better please Krishna, then he sees what he can calculate with. Is it same or is it
okay, so is the path of dovetailing things in Krishna's service, or the path of surrendering everything, you know, are they different or the same? So this is, once it's understood that there is a difference, then one has to appreciate the sameness also. And he said, in other words, depending upon the situation of application you see from one side or another. And it's very important. Otherwise, if this one is not understood or if it's understood wrong, then you get these two ends. Right? Then you get impersonalism and sense enjoyment. Like that. All the sahajya and all this stuff one side and then the impersonalist on the other. So, otherwise then you have those who follow the rules nicely will say those who have a spontaneous mood are wrong. They're all sahajyas. You know, lock, stock and barrel. Right? And those who are into these finer points, then they'll say everyone else, if they follow any rule, they'll say, oh, you know, we should do like that. Oh, that's all mighty, we don't care for that. So both of these extremes will not go back to Godhead in that mentality. They will get stuck. They won't get out of the material world. Because the path, the razor's edge, is in between those two. Those two ends aren't the thing. Of the two, then better to the rules, because at least it's solid. Because the other one is like building a building without a foundation. It'll collapse. And then when it collapses down to nothing. It collapses down to sense gratification. From Radha and Krishna, you know, then it goes into man and woman having sex. Direct. It's not maybe guaranteed. Because otherwise, where does it collapse to? Where does that conjugal collapse into? If there's no rules. And it won't be pious either, it'll be sinful. Right? So taking material sense gratification, adjusting it according to the rules, engaging in Krishna's service, from there, then you give that up, then you go into it. So therefore, the Vaidhi is a stronger platform than Rag that doesn't use Vaidhi. Of course, if you understand Raga Nuga, you understand it's using all the rules. There's just a spontaneous application of them. Spontaneous doesn't mean whimsical. It means inspired application. In other words, Vaidhi means it's by force I'm doing it. But I want to do it. But by knowledge I am doing it. It means it's the intelligence that makes me follow the rules. That's Vaidhi stuff. Raganuga sadhana, because the word sadhana is still there, means I have natural inspiration to follow those rules. I'm following because I want to follow them. Vaidhi means I'm following because I have to follow them. So this point is missed by both of these camps. And each one therefore points at the other that they're better. But that's because the living entity wants to feel important. But that's not so needed. What's important is Krishna, the Acharyas, Krishna's pleasure is important. We're not so important like that. We become important by understanding the other's importance and our lack of importance. Right? Like that. Krishna, to Krishna we're important, but he can only exercise that appreciation of importance if our mentality is such that he can relate with us, right? And pride just doesn't fall into the picture. Right? So, therefore, that's the problem. You always see, an issue means you have the two camps at the two ends that don't know what they're talking about. Because if you know what you're talking about, there's no issue. Right? You always have the liberals and the reactionaries fighting. That's because they neither know what they're talking about. You know? Like that. So, it's part of the same process. It's one thing. So, the Vaidhi, the Raga Nuga, it's the same thing. But, one is founded on the other. Right? And they're both founded on the rules that are given by Krishna. Because sadhana means you don't have bhakti. That's the bottom line. One may say rag this, rag that. That's nice. But understand, raganuga sadhana means one who does not have love for Krishna. You understand? That's sadhana bhakti. But they are aspiring to come to the platform of love. Bhava bhakti means is the glimmer of it, but it still is not bhakti. Prema means bhakti. So with that framework, then those who are professing their raganuga sadhana, though they are saying it's such an elevated, from the eyes of the whole picture, it's still quite far down. You know, if you're just in categorizing. Since they're categorizing, since they're being judgmental, then let us be judgmental and put everything accordingly. Right? But the point is it's part of the same process. The rules are established so that we know what we should do and what we shouldn't do. Otherwise, if we're doing something we shouldn't do to please Krishna, then that's not very nice. Or something we should do or avoid, that's also not very nice. Okay? So it sets a standard, a culture, that everyone who claims to be a devotee can function by, right? You can imagine what communication would be like if everyone had the freedom to put their own interpretation to the meaning of each and every word. Right? There'd be no communication. So there's a standard, right? And where is that standard found? In a book, right? In a dictionary. Somebody argues over a word, you look in the dictionary. Then no argument's finished. So someone may have a confusion over what to do or not, you look in the book. And the Shastra tells us. Right? So we, in other words, you give up a lower freedom for a higher one. Right? That is there. Right? So then the idea is that therefore that's the platform of sadhana bhakti. Now, though we're doing it because we understand human life is meant to elevate ourselves, therefore I'm doing it, that's called Vaidhisadhana Bhakti. Right? But if we're doing it because this is nice, I like chanting Hare Krishna, I like coming to the temple, I like doing these things, it's not the mundane mind. It's a glimmer of the spiritual mind that's starting to come through. How you can tell the difference is the spiritual always works according to what should be done. You know? Not dry, not fixed, but means it is okay. The other one means it is according to our conditioned nature, and therefore then it may have some flavor of that. So we always have to be careful. That's why it's so important then Guru Sadhu Shastra. What is good, you know. Just because I like it doesn't mean it's going to get us to where we want to go. You know? Like that. I may like, two buses show up, you know. Well, this bus looks nicer than that bus. I'd rather get on this bus. But unfortunately, that bus is going to where you want to go, and that one's going in another direction. You know? So that's why the sentiment has to be seen within the framework of the directions of the scriptures. Then it's better, because what we're trying to do is catch the mind. That's all we're trying to do. And we're using the intelligence and the senses as means to do that. But the problem is the mind is attracted to everything else. Right? You read about the gopis, and then immediately the one is thinking about mundane sensuality. So therefore, then read less on that, do more work. Right? Then when the work is purified, then, hearing these things, then it will remind you of Krishna, not sense gratification. So all it is just a state of what it's in. You know, it's not that something's wrong. But it's the discrimination is made so that you understand which way to go and how to progress. It's not meant for creating party spirit. Right? That's a misapplication. You know what I'm saying? If you can't tell the difference between a cooked potato and a raw one, there's no chance that you will ever be able to cook a potato. You understand? You can't. So that's why you have to be able to tell the stages. So you can tell whether it is cooked or siddha, right? Siddha means perfection. You won't be perfect unless you know what is perfect. And you have to therefore know what is not perfect. And then what is the process to get from imperfect to perfect? So that's the thing. So just throwing out the rules, or it's just only the rules, they're both a problem. But of the two, you have to know what's the step. Right? Right? Just like the ground floor, everyone will agree, is lower than the first floor. But the first floor is sitting on top of the ground floor. You remove the ground floor, first floor becomes the ground floor. You understand? So that's the point. So one has to progress. And if one is proud that, yes, I am on a higher platform bhakti than someone else, that is, then one won't progress anymore. There's a limit how much you can progress with that. Though you can get quite advanced. Therefore, even though somebody is proud, you shouldn't take it that they're neophytes. You can get to the uttam platform with a proud mentality. But you'll get stuck there. And, you know, you can get in it, and Haridas Thakur says, you can get stuck there for hundreds of lifetimes as an Uttamadikari and never get to claim it because of pride. So therefore, just because we see pride doesn't mean we should relegate the person to a neophyte platform. Necessarily, you have to see so many things. Right? So, but if you don't get rid of it, it will create a problem later. So it's much easier to develop humility when you have nothing to be proud about than to develop humility when you have something that you could be proud about. Right? The gopis are with Krishna. Right? The gopis are the most fortunate persons in the cosmic creation. Right? So that's something they could be proud about. Right? So getting rid of it there is a little bit more difficult, right, and more painful than getting rid of it when you are nothing to really be proud about. Does that make some sense? So that's why you have both of these things. One is, it's the path is counted as one to encourage and inspire us. Is that, okay, you may be here, and then it goes to here, it's all bhakti. Because its purpose is bhakti, it's all bhakti, right? Washing the pots, cutting the sabji, is also called cooking. But technically, it's not cooking. But it's all cooking, right? Like that. You're inspired to cook, then you also wash pots, cut things, this and that, right? But if you just walk in the kitchen, I only cook, someone else has got to wash the pots, turn on the fire, put the pot on the fire, like this. It's not going to happen. So the whole thing. So that's inspiring to create action. Right? Then looking at it and defining between them so you understand what's higher and lower and what is the process, that's for contemplation. To actually contemplate, where am I actually on the spiritual path? You know, because naturally we have always generally had a good opinion of ourselves. It's a pretty common platform. It's whatever we're doing, it's the best, it's the most important, it's the center of the universe. So therefore, you know, I'm okay. You may or may not be okay, but definitely I'm okay. Right? Like that. So, like this, we have to, it's to break that. That we actually become introspective, right? One is to create introspection, one is to create action, right? So action that's not based on proper knowledge and introspection won't be as good or perfect as one that is, right? But naturally the first thing to learn is the activity. Then once the activity is there, then you can get into the finer points of introspection. Right? But to be only introspective and not do anything is also doesn't have much meaning. Right? To have knowledge and not apply it is useless. And just to do activity not based on knowledge is also not good. Okay. So then we'll, yes? Like, this will be the last question.
If you say that in Sankirtan, he no perceive the Prabhupada, no, he no have this relationship to Prabhupada, but if he will come into the holy Dham, he perceive the Prabhupada with devotees, with babies, he thinks, he say like that. The question is, Sankirtan, I'm talking for one year. He want to go with the with the mood in Sankirtan in the holy Dham. He says in Sankirtan in the West, like to give so many.
What's the connection between doing Sankirtan in the West and the holy Dham? So then, point is by performance of Sankirtan, then we actually can appreciate the Dham. Therefore, then when one comes here, one can appreciate Srila Prabhupada, his mission, and everything like that. Otherwise, a lot of people come and visit here, and, you know, they don't get the same understanding. So by preaching, then we can appreciate the Dham. By being in the Dham, we become inspired to preach. So they nourish each other. Right? So that's the point. Prajaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sanavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Janita Gaurudhavinoda ki.